Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast, where we're all about Commander, data, and dad jokes. I'm Joey Schultz and I'm joined by my fantastic co-hosts. Up first, he shrunk my Myco Tyrant card, which turned it into a Micro Tyrant. It's Matt Morgan.
So on our first date, I took my girlfriend to the ice rink where entry was half off, and I thought that was a pretty good deal. Turns out she just called me a cheapskate. I thought it was a really good way to break the ice, but it turns out it wasn't.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. Matt, this is not fair. I came fully prepared into the show like, oh, I'm so excited to talk. And you've just blown every other thought out of my head because that's one of the best jokes you've ever told. Holy crap.
So you're saying that the show is skating on thin ice as far as being productive and helpful.
Up next. That was wicked good, Matt. I love that. Up next, he loves the new disguise keyword, and he just can't wait for Wizards of the Coast to pull a Megamorph and make Mega Disguise. It's Dana Roach.
Yeah, you can't really tell behind me, but we had a small earthquake here today, so things are a little bit shaken up. It's not my fault, but it's
not
definitely
your...
a fault. I believe technically, I believe it's the New Madrid seismic zone fault, but it's not mine.
Mm.
Interesting, interesting. What an interesting line for that fault line. No, actually, I can't keep up with you guys. Anyway, Dana, what are we talking about in this week's episode?
This week, we're going to be talking about something Jim actually said recently in the most recent Commander Rules Committee update, playing weird cards that don't have a home elsewhere.
Yeah, I am excited to get into this. It was a really interesting line from that update, and you were like, hey, what if we, like, can we make a whole show about these cards that, like, are just, like, bring a lot of charm into Commander? And we're like, yeah, let's do that. So I'm excited to get into it, but we've got some shout-outs to do before we get to it. Up first, we want to thank Chase, a.k.a. Mana Curves, for their terrific work on the post-production of the show. Mana Curves, Chase, thank you so, so much.
And we are now a member of Team Ultimate Guard, so when you see us at MagicCon Chicago, we will all be rocking these sweet Ultimate Guard deck boxes and see our nice katana sleeves. Fantastic product, and you absolutely should check it out.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by subscribing on YouTube, liking this video, subscribing to your local podcast app, or you can go to patreon.com/EDHRetcast. We're of patron tiers of all sorts of levels, whether you want to join our Discord community. There's so many features over there, some that are upcoming even.
Ooh.
More news on that in the future. But go to patreon.com/EDHRetcast for all of those awesome ways to support us there too. So there's also a great feature, great benefit for all of our patrons, the weekly and coveted patron shout out. And this week, Benjamin Collins, thank you so much for Collins in that your home page on your browser.
That was a stretch, but I liked it.
I don't know if Ben is 21 and I wanted to ask about his uncle Tom Collins, but
Matt, I gotta say, like, from your 10 out of 10 dad joke from your very intro to Collins at home, I feel like there's been a slight change in the atmosphere here, a slight dip.
I thought it was warming up, but turns out that's not good for ice. Frosty the Snowman didn't do well in snow or do well in the heat, so I'm not either.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry, everybody. I tried. But Ben, either way, thank you for the support.
Yeah, thank you so much, Benjamin, for Collins at your home. You know what? Actually, the more I say it, the more I like it. So never mind.
See, there you go. It grows on you.
Yeah, it really does. All right. So guys, we are going to get into our main topic here. And Dana, as you said, there was that update from the Rules Committee a couple of weeks ago, and there was a really terrific line from Jim Lepage, as you said there, that said, if you're reading this, one way you can help to preserve Commander's charm is to dig deep and play weird cards just because they don't have a home elsewhere. And that line really resonated within the community, and especially, I know, with you, which is why you wanted to make a whole show about it. So I'm actually just going to, like, pass this all off to you. Where are you at? Where do you want to start when it comes to that vibe, that idea for a whole episode to be about?
Yeah, so the first caveat I want to throw out there is this isn't a challenge to stats, the show kind of situation. Like, that's one where we're talking about cards that are just generally good and should see more play and get overlooked for one reason or another. Mm. This isn't that. Not that we're going to be advocating you run Crawworm in your decks or whatever just to do it. But, like, we're talking about here cards that just aren't going to see play elsewhere, and should see a little bit of playing Commander because they're fun and they're interesting and they're something different and they just shake things up, because they're not going to see play. Technically, Rhystic Study is going to be better than this card that we're going to suggest for, you know, your blue deck or something, but these cards are interesting, and sometimes that's what the game is all about.
Yeah, we talk about all the time on this show, just because we're about EDH Rec and what people are playing, we still love just being able to get to play these cards that we never maybe didn't get to play them in 60-card formats. They just completely skipped that. Or we played them in 60-card formats a little bit, and they're just fun, old, random cards that just just bring joy to our hearts. And they're not obviously the optimal cards, but they're still the cards that like we choose to play. And those are for me, at least, those are my favorite cards. The cards you don't have to play, you choose to play those.
Yeah, that's absolutely. These are the little, I'm hoping just an episode full of little cards that bring us joy. Just like, because where else are we going to get to play these? And these little things, they're not great, but that's the point. They're the type of cards that you look at them, you go like, that is what Commander is about to me. Matt, is there a place that you'd like to start off?
Well, I mean, I was talking to Dana about this earlier before we started, and my whole Raga Draga deck, I feel like very much applies to, oh, this is Commander. This is some shenanigans that you don't get to do other places. Mm. So for those of you who don't know, my Raga Draga Gorguts boss deck, that is my Eldrazi deck. And you might think, well, yeah, because Raga Draga's ability to, whenever you cast big spells, you get to untap creatures and pump it up quite a bit. But actually, this is my Eldrazi deck because I play Eldrazi Scions and Eldrazi Spawns in there because they have mana abilities. And I don't know about you, but where are you going to see cards like Rapacious One in just really any format these days? Nobody's paying 6 mana for that effect.
That's a kind of a perfect example here too, Matt, because a lot of the cards that I'm going to mention here are in my decks because like I've chosen to do a specific thing in that deck. And I think that's a really great backdoor to find reasons to run these cards. You know, if you are playing an artifact-centric deck, maybe you want to decide to like, I'm going to run no enchantments in this deck because it's an artifact deck. And therefore, you have to figure out ways to do things that you would normally do with enchantment with an artifact. And that's going to lead you to find cards that you would not otherwise run. That's a really good way, I think, to do that. And you've, by doing that with this Gorguts deck, you've found a whole bunch of cards to play that wouldn't otherwise probably normally see play in a deck that would be filled with variations on Llanowar Elves, say.
Yeah, those Land of War Elves, like a bunch of Mandarorks, does tend to be the typical way that you see Raga Draga built, but instead you've opted for like, these other things have some nice mana abilities, which I find very, very enjoyable every time that I get to see it.
Yeah, I still have some of those cards. Like, I still have Birds Paradise because, I mean, I want to cast all my spells, but then I'm casting Birds of Paradise so that I can later cast Birthing Hulk. And there's maybe like 60 other people that are actually playing Birthing Hulk. And that's just one of the fun things that I really enjoy about this deck, too. And there's other options, too, like Outpost Siege. So many people play in just a ton of decks. But looking a little bit deeper, like there's Brazen Cannonade, which is just, that's a really silly one that I like a lot. So there's a lot of just fun little interactions that just kind of led to me really just enjoying and digging into this deck specifically, because it's so many things that I don't get to do in other formats. It's just something that's only going to happen in Commander.
I got a shout out, by the way. Your Brazen Cannonade tech in that deck is amazing, because it says whenever an attacking creature you control dies, it deals 2 damage to each opponent. You attack with your Scions, and then they deal damage, and then in the post-combat, they're still technically an attacking creature, so you sacrifice them for mana, and then you deal damage, extra damage on top of it. It's freaking brilliant. I absolutely love that.
It's a very good card, folks. That's not a Commander-only thing. That's just a very good card.
But I do need to say that there is someone else who plays Birthing Hulk a lot, and that's actually Dana, because he's got an Eldrazi Scion in Spawn deck, too.
Which is funny. We kind of independently, both at the same time, built two different decks designed entirely around Eldrazi Spawns and Scions.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is bizarre. But yeah, I mean, in same thought process there. I had built a deck, Jahira, Agent of the Iron Throne, and I'm like, what could I do that was different with this particular combo of creatures? And I did the same thing, Eldrazi Spawns and Scions. And I have a deck also filled with a bunch of those cards that, you know, if you look at EDH Rec, 5% of the people playing them are you and me.
Well, yeah, and that's just it. Where else are you going to see someone play Dread Drone, which is like a five mana make two spawns? Like, that is limited draft chaff ultimate right there. But like, that is the thing that's charming about Commander, is just like, oh yeah, I found a place where this card can actually be kind of decent, and that there's no way that doesn't feel absolutely amazing.
Yeah, another one, you know, I've talked recently, one of the more recent decks of mine is my Calafay Beloved of the Sea deck. It's a mono blue deck, Voltron, built around devotion to blue. And because I want to have as many blue permanents in play as possible, one of the things I decided to do with that deck for a theme was I'm running no instants or sorceries. It's entirely a permanent-based deck, which is a pretty unusual thing to see for a mono-blue deck. Color's known for reacting at instant speed, particularly with counterspells. So as a result, I've had to run a lot of kind of oddball things in this deck that I wouldn't otherwise run. All of my counterspells are the counterspells on creatures with flash. I have to do things with enchantments that I would otherwise try to do with creatures. You know, all of my draw mechanics and stuff are cards like Insight, where I draw when someone plays a green spell. I mentioned Rhystic Study before. Rhystic Study is a much better card than Insight, but like, when all of my things have to be on enchantments, I have to dig pretty deep, so I'm running a card like Insight in that deck. That's a similar thing to your Raga Draga deck back, where when you have made these decisions to try to do something outside the box, that's when you find these cool cards that just aren't going to see play elsewhere. So do you have anything, Joey, like we mentioned one from Matt or I, where like you've specifically taken kind of a weird direction with a deck, and as a result, it has some strange cards that like just don't normally see play?
Oh, yeah. The most recent deck that I've built is a Rule Zero Time deck, where it starts with the Ninth Doctor, and then if I ever have to recast the Commander, it becomes the Tenth Doctor, and then the Eleventh Doctor, and then the Twelfth Doctor. So I'm playing a Rule Zero Jeskai deck, which I'm way out of my element because I'm Mr. Golgari. What am I doing here with Jeskai? But I wanted it to feel like I am playing with time as much as possible in that deck. So I finally found a home for one of our very first preview cards, which is Aeon Engine, the artifact that reverses the game's turn order, which shows up in 1900 decks right now. And it's like, it's not a great card, but like, where else am I going to get the chance to play this? Like, I love that. And I also, like, I was playing back in the original Ravnica and also into the Time Spiral and Future Sight block. And like, one of my favorite cards from Planar Chaos was Chronozoa, a little amoeba flying 3/3 that slowly vanishes. And if it completely vanishes, it does a mitosis, and now you have two copies of it. And then those will slowly vanish, and then you've got four copies, and et cetera, et cetera. And if I'm playing with time counters, if I get to time travel, y'all, I want to flood a board with Chronozoa so bad. This card is not great, but where else am I going to get the chance to do this? Like, that is fully the thing for me with this. I was just like, that. I look at these cards and I'm like, this is what Commander is about to me. I want to make people smile with these cards, because I absolutely think that that's the reaction that people will get when they see, you're playing Aeon Engine? You're playing Chronozoa? I haven't seen that card in ages. Like, that's what this is about to me, for sure.
Yeah, there's so many different things, and especially too, it's fun to get to play old cards that you maybe played when you were doing other formats. I mean, for me too, my Sig River Guide deck, that just harkens back to when I first got back into Magic, I should say, and just a bunch of cards that they weren't really getting played anymore, like maybe some of them here and there, but like, yeah, Merfolk is a deck for Modern and Legacy. But then also I'm putting it next to like some really not great commanders or really not great cards to like Enclave Cryptologist. It's just like back when it was like, oh, these are cards that I just have laying around.
Is that the level up Merfolk?
That is the level up Merfolk. And if you invest, I want to say it's like 6 mana total into it, after you cast it, you can tap it to draw a card. That's where things really get powerful.
Yeah, card's not great, but like, you can't, there's no way that doesn't bring a smile to your face when you see these old things, right? Like that is an interesting position we find ourselves in Commander these days, where it does feel like we kind of sometimes run the risk of optimizing the fun out of our decks. So yeah, if you can find these things, it's just like, oh, I don't know where else I would get the chance to play this. And it feels nice to stay in tune with that side of what got us into Commander in the first place.
Yeah, and just playing, I want to say, playing back then, swings felt even more swingier. I don't think that's a real word. But when you cast a card like Overwhelming Intellect, one of Dana's favorite cards, you just got this massive, massive swing. But also there's probably like 13 mana involved with casting those two spells.
Well, it was also like, it was easier to find deep cuts back then and surprise people, because Commander was a new thing. Mm-hmm. So what counted as a weird underplayed card 10 years ago was a whole different beast than it was today. Rhystic Study was a weird underplayed card 10 years ago.
Right.
And yeah. That, you know, that is not how the game works anymore. So, like, if you were want to be outside the box, you have to dig a little bit deeper and be a little bit more intentional about it than maybe you once did. But there's still a lot of fun gems to be found out there that work really well in decks if you want to do that kind of a deep dive.
Yeah, like Rhystic Study wasn't always a staple, but then on the reverse side, Mind's Eye kind of was a card that a lot of people had to put into decks, and you still have a chance to play Mind's Eye. Like, it's been cut from a lot of decks, but that doesn't mean you can't still play it. It's still a great effect.
Yeah, 10 years ago, Rhystic Study was maybe the weird card that didn't see play, and Mind's Eye was maybe a staple. And the inverse is true. Today, you might well drop a Mind's Eye at a table, and you'll look like you're playing something strange no one had seen before. So I have a Val, Candlekeep Researcher, and Haunted One background deck. And the point of the deck is to basically swing at people with a bunch of buffed up mages. Because of the way Val works, I can tap her to add mana pool. But I can't use it to cast spells from my hand. And Haunted One, whenever a creature, whenever my commander becomes tapped, it gives creatures that share a creature type +2/+0 and undying. So the point of the deck is to tap and untap Val as many times as possible in a single turn, because the Haunted One trigger isn't restricted to once a turn or on attack. So if I can tap and untap her repeatedly, I can buff a bunch of mages up and swing in for lethal with a team that wouldn't normally look like it would be swinging at people. So that, number one, lends itself to running a bunch of strange cards. But beyond that, because I'm creating so much mana when I'm repeatedly tapping and untapping Val, it becomes beneficial to run a bunch of bad draft chaffed mages like Azur Mage that don't see play otherwise, that have an ability that doesn't require you to tap the mage, spend 3 and a blue to draw a card. That's not a particularly good ability, and no one's really running that creature. But in that deck where I'm going to oftentimes be making in a single turn, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 mana that I can't use to cast a creature spell, I can just throw it into the Azur Mage and draw, you know, 3 or 4 cards. So that deck, because of how I've chosen to build it, there's 32 creatures in that deck, and 22 of them are probably ones that you would look at and like, why is that in this deck?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just a reason to look to build something that's slightly different than maybe what you would see, because that's another way that you can find yourself just putting a bunch of weird cards in decks that wouldn't see play otherwise, and that's how you wind up with Frostwind Evoker in your list, or Gem Palm Sorcerer, or Mystic Archaeologist, or Forbidden Inspector, and those cards are also obscure that I just made up one of them, and you're not really sure which one I made up. Right.
I was gonna say I don't recognize at least 3 of those cards you just said.
He made up all of them, actually.
Maybe I made them all up. We don't know, right?
That is fun. Yeah, taking those like little weird, like, what does that do type of cards, and like actually promoting them into, you were being beat down by a little draft chaff uncommon, like, is a very, that's a cool thing that you only see in Commander, and I guess in Limited, but like,
right, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a wonderful thing. And I love the way that like, these charming cards, these interesting, I don't mean literally charms, I mean cards that like have a charm to them.
Right.
they can manifest in some different ways. Like, there are the pet cards that you have that you're like, ooh, let me just run this just because. And then there's also like cards that can guide the entire direction of a deck. For me, for example, Baneful Omen is one of those. Like, it's a 7 mana do nothing enchantment. This is not a good card in a one-on-one format. This is the 7 mana black enchantment. Beginning of your end step, reveal the top card of your library. If you do, each opponent loses life equal to that card's converted mana cost. You don't even draw the card. It stays there. But I've been able to like kind of shape my entire Yunette deck around this, because the entire deck is like doing, you know, cheating stuff into play if it has an odd mana cost when Yunette attacks, which is really, really fun. But my favorite way to win is with Baneful Omen. And I did, like, over time, I kind of tried to direct the deck a little bit away from just like, oh, Yunette is the powerhouse here, and more into like, can I make a string of things happen where I'm Baneful Omening and I'm Keen Duelisting, and I'm also Twilight Profiting, and I'm using the Sorin that also has this ability. Like, I'm just trying to just put stuff back on top of my deck just for the Baneful Omen trigger as many times as possible, because that's hysterical to me. So there are the pet cards, and there's also the way that these pet cards can actually completely reshape the direction that your deck is going to go.
I mean, well, if you want to talk about cards that just reshape what the deck is doing, Joey, you and I both have a Top Deck Matters deck. Yours is very, very different than mine, though, because mine is my Vivictus Asmati the Dire deck, which is all about what's the wildest thing that I can cheat into play for everybody. And, like, yes, I am playing good cards, quote unquote. You can say that, like, both of the Atalis that are in there, they're good cards, and they're powerful, for sure.
Yeah.
Woodfall Primus, pretty close to a staple. But Avatar of Slaughter is neither of those things. Avatar of Slaughter is a 8-mana 8/8 that all creatures have double strike and attack each turn if able. And it was originally printed in the original Commander product, and it's only been reprinted up until recently. So it's sat there for a long time not doing anything. But that's a card that just absolutely just makes me laugh so hard whenever it happens, because just the chaos it causes on the table.
Well, and that makes sense, Matt, because you can't spell slaughter without laughter.
It's very, very true.
When you cheat that into play off of your Vivictus trigger mid-combat, and then suddenly everything has double strike?
Mid-combat.
What are we playing Commander for, if not that type of moment?
Well, and I recently put in Archfiend of Depravity, too. I hadn't seen that card. I forgot it even existed until I was sorting cards out because I was giving some to some friends of mine. And I was like, wait, that card still exists in 2024. It was great back then when Fate Reforged first came out. I think everybody kind of forgot about it, but I still think it's absolutely great.
Oh, yeah. I love that one. That's so 5-mana, 5/4, beginning of each opponent's end step, they choose up to 2 creatures that they control and then sacrifice the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, good board control helps you deal with enemies who are like, oh, I've got a bunch of tokens, and you're like, nah, no, you're not. But there's kind of an interesting lesson that we can learn from this when we look at its EDH rec page. Like, it's showing up in 37,000 decks. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But its most popular commanders tend to be, this is a commander that cares about demons. You got your Rakdos, the Showstoppers. You got your Bellicor, the Dark Master.
Yeah.
Your Vivictus deck does not feel that way. Like, you're not like, oh, I need to...
Does not care.
Yeah. And I think that that's also kind of a habit that we sometimes slip into. And, like, it's a good habit, I think, where we do want to extract every iota of value out of a card, down to its mana cost, down to its power and toughness, down to its creature types, down to its keywords, down to its text box. We don't just play an individually good card. We want it to have those branching synergies, those ripple effects throughout the rest of the deck. And those are really fun moments when you can make them happen. But there's also, like, sometimes you just play a thing that is like, yeah, this is just efficient. This is just going to get the job done. And I don't need to worry too hard about, like, having those big, massive ripple effects. And I think that you embody that really well when you are finding cards like these to play in your gigantic dragon deck that's cheating ridiculous stuff into play.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of decks, too, that care about cheating things into play, they want to keep them in play. But I'm also playing stuff like Morbid Curiosity, which rewards me for sacrificing bigger and dumber things. So it's just some of those fun things. And then I think your favorite card in this deck, Joey, is Ugin's Nexus, which is only in 10,000 decks right now. And, like, it's still a fair number, but it's just you don't see it a whole lot, because I remember when it was originally printed, the reaction that everybody had to Ugin's Nexus was, well, why would I want to pay mana and then have to sacrifice it later?
Yeah.
That just didn't make sense to everybody back then.
Ugin's Nexus is so dang good. You use this in your Vivictus deck. I use this in my Baba deck.
Yeah.
You using a Morbid Curiosity on this card is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in a dang game. Ugin's Nexus is the 5-mana legendary artifact. If a player would begin an extra turn, they have to skip that turn instead. But if Ugin's Nexus would be put into a graveyard from the battlefield, instead exile it and take an extra turn yourself. So, like, our commanders, we can both eat this artifact, which is why we love it so much. But you also have, like, other cards that are just like, and I'll sacrifice it and draw 5 cards while I do it with the Morbid Curiosity. And yeah, those synergies are just terrific. And again, 10,000 decks for Ugin's Nexus. If anything, that's higher than I thought it would be. But there are a lot of cool ways to manipulate this cool card that is doing something that you don't usually get to see.
So we've been talking for a while here about cards that are just fun to play and weird and different. But maybe we can actually challenge some cards that should be played for statistical reasons and challenge some stats here.
Yeah.
I can't lie. When you first started talking about the about, like, the topic, you were just like, and we don't want this to be like a challenge to stats show. I had this, like, reflexive 2023 reaction of just like, is he about to take the challenge to stats segue? We're like 2 minutes into the show. Is he about to do this? Thank goodness we're not, though. I need to learn to move past that. But yes, Dana, you're absolutely right. We've got some stats to challenge here on the website because there's a whole bunch of them, but we don't always agree with them. So let's take a quick break and come back with that. All right, I'm going to start us off with challenge to stats this week. And I have a challenge for the Sliver Grave Mother decks, which came out in the Commander Master set. Kind of a mess. of a precon, specifically that mana base, not gonna lie, and Commander Masters in general, also kind of a mess, but that's not what we're here for today. If you have a Sliver Gravemother deck, there is a card that I think is probably showing up a little bit too much, sort of a holdover from some precon effect situations going on there, and that is the card Blur Sliver, which is showing up in 56% of those Sliver Gravemother decks. This is a simple 3-mana Sliver that helps give your Slivers haste, and that is very, very helpful. The thing is, there are so many other Slivers that also give haste that I don't think you end up needing this one. For example, Cloud Shredder Sliver is a 2-mana haste and flying, or there's the new Firewake Sliver, also 3-mana, and it also can let you sacrifice your Slivers to buff up other Slivers. Those ones are already really great, and they're showing up in like 97% and 58% of Sliver decks. But then there's also even like Heart Sliver, which is actually showing up in fewer Sliver Gravemother decks than the Blur Sliver. And that one's 2-mana to give all Slivers haste. Granted, to say all Slivers, not just Slivers you control, but like, when you're in a Sliver deck, I think the mana cost does matter. Having those extra things, those little edges can definitely add up. So here, I think Blur Sliver is proving to be a little bit redundant. You've got so many other things that already do that effect that I don't think you need this one. So I'm going to say that 56% inclusion for Blur Sliver, probably a little bit too high, and you can maybe cut that one to either make room for the Heart Sliver if you want a cheaper version of that effect, or make room for a different Sliver that's going to give you any other type of benefit beyond the stuff that you've already got access to. So that is my challenge this week.
Well, Joey, I actually also have a pre-constructed commander to challenge here. So mine is going to be for the new Murders at Karlov Manor pre-constructed decks, the Deep Clue Sea deck one specifically. So Morska Undersea Sleuth is the face commander for that. And this is the commander that's all about rewarding you for making a bunch of clue tokens, drawing extra cards, and then putting +1/+1 counters onto Morska after you draw your second card each turn. So the card that I think is just absolutely just a powerhouse here is going to be Rise and Shine. It's only getting added to about 22% of decks right now. And Rise and Shine is just absolutely one of those cards that I think gives Commander a whole lot of charm, but also one that I've been trying really hard to find a home for myself. We talk a lot about how some of these Bant decks, they're really, really good at generating a ton of value, but then they don't actually find ways to close the game and actually win. Rise and Shine is just that card. So one in a blue for a source that says target non-creature artifacts you control becomes a 0/0 artifact creature. Put 4+1/+1 counters on each artifact that became a creature this way. And then the really powerful version of this is the overload cost that is 4 blue. So you can turn all of your non-creature artifacts into 4/4 beaters. It's just a great way to convert a lot of maybe extra clue tokens you have laying around. If you're playing, I don't know, like Academy Manufacturer, all those clue, food, and treasure tokens into 4/4s. It's just an absolute beating. There's also Overdrive Awakener, which is a creature version of this. There's a lot of really, really powerful ways that you can weaponize these artifacts, especially the tokens that you're making in the deck. And you got to find something to win the game with. And these are great ways to do that.
Yeah, that Cyberdrive Awakener is showing up in nearly 50% of the Morska deck so far. So Rise and Shine definitely should rise up to meet those numbers, I think, because they're both so efficient at winning games for this type of strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. They're both cards that should be probably played and added to more Morska decks than they currently are.
Well, my challenge this week is brought to us by super fan and listener Crab Baskets. Crab says that he got to taking a look at the card Familiar's Ruse. Familiar's Ruse is a 2-mana counterspell. As an additional cost to cast a spell, return a creature you control to its owner's hand and then counter the spell. Crab writes, it feels like a tempo hit to bounce a creature you have in play to counter a spell, but in the right deck, being able to recast a creature to get an ETB trigger can be very powerful on top of being able to counter a spell. And he was curious how many Cascade commanders run this, since Familiar's Ruse can just bounce that Cascade commander back to your hand and let you get a Cascade trigger again. And currently only 2 Yidris Maelstrom Wielder decks are running Familiar's Ruse, and only 4 Maelstrom Wanderer decks are running it. Now, there's a logic to not playing counter spells in that kind of deck. They aren't things that you're going to easily be able to hit with your Cascade triggers, and they can kind of kill the chain that maybe you're trying to set off with Maelstrom Wanderer. But there's 500 decks running Counterspell in Maelstrom Wanderer, and another couple hundred running straight up Counterspell in Yidris decks. And yeah, there's a logic to replacing things like Counterspell with Familiar's Ruse in that deck. Every Maelstrom Wanderer deck I've ever played in basically is taunting you about destroying their commander so they can recast it. And if you're already running Counterspell, I'd be really, really tempted to just swap that out with Familiar's Ruse. The upside on there is pretty huge, and in that kind of deck, that's just not much downside at all. So that's a good pick, Crab Baskets. If you're doing some kind of a Cascade deck like that, Familiar's Ruse is a really solid card in that kind of deck, or a deck just filled with ETB stuff in general.
Dana, this challenge reminds me of you challenging Abjur a long time ago, which is the one blue mana counterspell that forces you to sacrifice a blue permanent to counter a spell. And you've used that in some very brutally efficient ways, but Familiar's Ruse can be used in some similar ways too. Like when you see either of those in like a ninja deck to put Yuriko back into the command zone, which is like if you're playing a lot of ninjas, that's where she wants to be, to command her ninjutsu a little bit more easily to hit people. Yeah, these counter spells that look like they have a drawback that you can actually manipulate to your own advantage, those are pretty cool moments. So yeah, think wisely about them.
I mean, manipulating a drawback to an advantage is a great way to wind up running a weird underplayed card that doesn't see play anywhere else in a commander deck.
Hey, look at you bringing things full circle back into our main topic, Dana.
There we go.
Super professional, absolutely. Yeah. I do also, like, I've got another example here that is sort of just a category of things that I feel like we don't get to appreciate very much in other aspects of the Magic the Gathering universe, I guess. And I just kind of want to shout out Fogs. Like, I think I've made an entire video about, like, you should play more Fogs. Because in Commander, they really are, they can be absolutely huge upsets. But, like, in another format, you really don't want to play Fogs. Like, it's so much more efficient for you to remove an opponent's creature or creatures as opposed to stalling them out for one turn. So a regular Fog is not great in one-on-one Magic. But in EDH, sometimes it feels like you're time-walking somebody. So, like, the last time that I got to blow someone out with a Batwing Broom, which made them not only, like, I prevented their damage, but also they lost life for each creature that was attacking. Like, those moments are also quintessential EDH to me. There's no way that those don't bring a smile to your face. So I just wanted to shout out Fogs as another category that kind of meets the topic of the show too.
Yeah, and they're the kind of spell that one of the things we've talked about plenty in the past is, like, creating stories.
Yeah.
And, like, Fogs are great for doing that. They create that story where, like, someone has the blowout board state that they think is going to kill everybody, and suddenly they don't. And they're wide open for someone to then swing back and take them out. Three people in some cases that just almost lost the game are now, like, have their knives sharpened for revenge. So yeah, no, that's are they always the most optimal thing to run necessarily? No, but they're interesting cards that don't see a lot of play elsewhere and make for good stories.
I mean, I would argue that there's some pretty good Fogs these days, though. Like, you have stuff like Ink Shield, Arachnogenesis. Like, yes, all the things that Joey just said about Fogs still are true, but finding ways, again, to weaponize the spells that you're casting, they're pretty great at winning games, too.
Nowadays, when we talk about Fog, we're not talking about Fog.
No.
Yeah.
Well, and they also have started to lean a little bit more into the Illusionist's Gambit style Fog too, that really do, like, play with the multiplayer nature. And it is, like, where else are you going to play these only Commander legal cards? Like, than Commander, obviously. But, like, I do appreciate, like, Matt, you really enjoy the Misleading Signpost new card because of its redirection ability, right?
Yeah, I do. It's just a fantastic way. You're not actually fogging, but you're just playing around with, okay, I want you to attack that person instead. So the politics of Commander get to be expressed on physical cards. That's a really, really fun way to play Commander because you're getting a lot of different things going on just in one card.
Yeah, and they just made that new Take the Bait card as well in the Karlov Manor set, which is the Boros version of Illusionist's Gambit, I guess. The instant that you can only cast during an opponent's turn and only during their combat, and you prevent all damage that would be dealt to you and Planeswalkers you control this turn, but then you untap all those things that they were attacking with and you goad them, and then they have to attack again. So it's just like, listen, you can still attack my opponents, but you're going to leave me alone, and in fact, you have to attack my opponents. And so they keep leaning into those, and I think those also can make for some fun moments where it's just like, dang, these had a wild effect now, didn't they?
One I'm a fan of, and this one's a little bit more universal. It doesn't necessarily want to go in a specific deck like a lot of the ones we've talked about. Keep Watch is a blue instant, two and a blue. Draw a card for each attacking creature. And I think people tend to want to run it in a deck where you are going to have a lot of attacking creatures because then you can control, you know, what you're doing. So if you're playing some kind of a blue token deck, it's great. But it's not just restricted to what you're doing. You can cast that on anyone else's turn. It's not creatures that you control that are attacking. It's just attacking creatures. And there's a lot of situations where, you know, someone else is doing that disgusting thing with a whole bunch of creatures and lets you draw a mitful off what they are doing, even if they're attacking somebody else. It's just one of those cards that, like, people aren't prepared to swing at somebody with eight creatures, and you, the third party sitting there, just draws a mitful of cards. And at three mana, too, if we're talking about, like, cards just being generally pretty useful, you only need to draw two cards at instant speed for that to be a pretty good rate of return just in general for blue instant speed draw spells.
True.
And think about how many times you see people attack with two creatures in Commander on a single turn. That's every turn, more or less, you know, for the most part, let alone how many times you see them attack with three or six or eight or 12 or whatever it winds up being.
Yeah, it's got that big berserk energy.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, let me muddle with someone else's combat just a little bit, just because it can, just because it's fun. Oh, I'm going to have you, you're attacking them, I'm going to help you, and also hurt you, but I'm going to help you.
But there's so many different cards, though, that kind of play around with the multiplayer aspect that really just make things fun. One of my favorites is Modify Memory. It's four and a blue, and you get a sorcery that says exchange control of two target creatures controlled by different players. Now, that effect we've seen a lot. That's not a novel concept. But tacking on the if you controlled neither creature, you draw three cards.
Mm.
It's such a fun way to just play around with the multiplayer political aspect of Commander that we don't get other places.
Yeah, Matt, as soon as you said this one, I was just like, dang it, because I've seen what you can do with this card, where you're like, maybe you'll give away something that you don't care about so that you can steal something, but also sometimes you'll just ruin our day, but it's like, all right, you two, let's swap your commanders, which don't do anything for each other's decks, and also I get to draw cards just, you know, you're kind of a fiend with this one a little bit, which I think is really, really terrific, even if I'm a little bit salty about it still.
I mean, that card specifically, though, I saw it because Sheldon Menery had been playing it in his You Did This To Yourself deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I think anything from that deck specifically just gets an honorary pass anyways for adding to the culture of Commander. Another card from my Council 4 deck that I really like is just Secrets of the Golden City,
which
it was kind of only regularly played a little bit in draft-ish, but it's one blue-blue for a sorcery that says draw two cards, but if you have the city's blessing, you draw three cards instead. And, well, in Commander, it's all about how much can you put on the board, and it's not that hard to get the city's blessing to ascend and have 10 or more permanents on the battlefield. So really, Secrets of the Golden City is just a draw three.
Yeah, absolutely. it's so weird to hear Matt talk about blue cards. That's just a thing I have to
Yeah, it is.
It is a little jarring for me, too.
Yeah. But kind of going back to like the futzing with the multiplayer nature of things, I also wanted to quick shout out the card Douthi Embrace, which is another personal favorite of mine, mm-hmm. that also has those maybe I'll hinder, maybe I'll help, maybe I'll just serve my own needs. And that's the three mana black enchantment that you can pay two black to give target creature shadow until end of turn, which has so many applications. This card would be mm-hmm. such a dud in a regular one-on-one game. There's no other format where I'm going to be able to make use of this thing. But you can give your own creature shadow so that it's basically impossible for someone else to block. Or you can give someone else's attacking creature shadow so that it can't be blocked when they're attacking one of your mutual opponents. Or you can give a creature shadow to make it so that it cannot block other stuff. This card's so good, and it's only showing up in 6,400 decks right now. Oh, I love Douthi Embrace, and I love the little annoying... But Matt, I'm going to Douthi Embrace you since you modified my memory, all right? That's what we're going
to
do here.
That's fine. If that's the trade-off that we have to go through, I can live with that.
Well, speaking of like little annoying things, I'm not sure if the white and black counterspells are necessarily that great. In white, particularly, you have Reprieve and you have Lapse of Certainty. In black, I tend to think of Imp's Mischief in particular.
Mm.
They're useful and they're pretty good, but I'm not sure if very often you can rationalize like running them over something that just solves a problem in those colors.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're always fantastic. It's always a great thing to do to somebody because no one is ever ready for the white counterspell or the black counterspell. And you know, those are things that catch people off guard. Very rarely are they ever dead. They're just maybe not optimal, but where else are they going to see play? And they create a good story, create a good memory, create a good game.
Whenever someone equips a Sunforger to their creature, I am immediately worried about white counterspells for the rest of the game. I'm just like, dang it, they can do anything now.
Sure, yeah.
Or, I mean, even if it's not a counterspell, you still can get stuff like Deflecting Swat.
Right, yeah.
It's just impossible to get rid of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, Sunforger is, like, that was one of the first cards I opened when I first started playing in like, the mirrored into early Ravnica stuff. I saw Sunforger, and I was just like, Thor's Hammer, this is an interesting game, let me try it. And wasn't great when I was trying to build one-on-one decks against people, but in Commander, it's like another one of those quintessential Commander cards. I'm just like, oh, thank goodness we get to play this card here. So that's also kind of a thing, in addition to the fact that it helps you find more cards like those white counterspells, which also are a terrific thing to experience here in this format. Well, and if you'll indulge me, I've got one last one here that I also just want to shout out, because again, where else am I going to find a home for this card except for Commander? Although it does probably kind of tip the scales into like being brutally efficient rather than just charming, but that's the card Tombstone Stairwell, which I've become kind of known for in my Conrad deck because of how much damage it can deal. The Tombstone Stairwell is the 4-mana world enchantment with cumulative upkeep of 2 mana, so you have to pay a lot of mana to keep this thing around. And it says at the beginning of each upkeep, that's each upkeep, if Tombstone Stairwell is on the battlefield, each player creates a 2/2 black zombie creature token with haste named Tombspawn for each creature card in their graveyard. And at the beginning of each end step, or when Tombstone Stairwell leaves the battlefield, you destroy all tokens created with Tombstone Stairwell. They cannot be regenerated. That's so many words. And this is a 4-mana enchantment that relies upon you having a bigger graveyard than your opponents for it to do anything in a one-on-one format, and you have to keep it around. And I think it's on the reserve list. It's only like, I think like $8 right now or something like that. But like in Commander, the words each upkeep. Each upkeep. And if Conrad is seeing all those tokens get destroyed all the turn, it's so much damage. And again, it's just one of those cards where like, where else am I going to get the chance to play this? And I guess like this one is less on the silly side, and it really is veering more into like, oh, that's like gross. Oh, that's wild. And it's really like, oh no, this is just like good. But that's also a thing that we get to enjoy about Commander too. Isn't just that like, oh, we found something that's a little bit silly, but also we found something that's just like, oh, I didn't know how powerful that card could be. And we've unlocked a potential. And that's also a cool feeling. I just wanted to shout out.
See, I would argue that the most powerful word in Commander is each.
Honestly.
Not when it's target, it's each.
Yeah.
And it helps everything scale. It helps everything go up and bigger, whether it's the multiplayer or it's like with Overload, instead of target artifact becomes 4/4 each.
Yeah.
And it just, I think that is probably the single most powerful word for Commander players.
Yeah.
So my kind of last thought on this subject in general, it kind of goes back to what I said in the beginning. I would suggest the best way to do this, to find these cards, isn't to just necessarily look for weird cards. Because there's a lot of cards out there. I think the best way to do it is like look for a way to do something interesting or different with your deck. And then that will give you a direction to look. If you have decided to not run any, you know, creatures in your deck, and I have a creatureless deck, then that's going to make you find a way to like, how can I emulate what I would be normally doing with creatures in this deck with something else? I think that is the best way to kind of find yourself, to find a way to look for a specific card without just like generically looking through every single card ever printed, trying to find something that looks interesting for a list. Find some kind of a way to make an opening in your deck that's looking for a specific weird thing, and then you can narrow down what you're trying to find.
I like that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. there is also, I think when we are first putting a deck together or when we're first getting into Commander, there's a lot of the struggle of like, how do I make the deck do anything at all in the first place? Mm-hmm. And I think that consumes a lot of our mental energy on that deck. But especially once we get into the groove of understanding how that deck works, we realize what is necessary, what isn't. And that's where it feels to me like once we've worn that weather down so that it feels more like, oh, okay, it knows what its job is, that's when we can mm-hmm. actually start to find those flares and those flourishes too. So maybe a little bit of familiarity is, I don't know, kind of a nice thing. I guess I'm kind of pondering whether Ugin's Nexus was in Matt's first draft of his Vavictus deck, if that makes any sense. Matt, you can answer that better than I can, but like that feels like a flair that you added later, maybe.
I can definitely answer it was not in my first draft by any means.
Yeah. And so these are discoveries that we get to make as well. Mm-hmm. And that feels nice. It's not a thing that we know for sure what we're going to do right from the bat all of the time. Mm-hmm. And that discovery aspect is a fun thing to lean into.
Yeah, I think going off color sometimes helps you discover this stuff too. Similarly, like if you're going to build a Boros equipment deck, it's probably going to be kind of difficult to find an odd card that isn't already seeing play in Boros equipment decks that works with your Boros equipment theme. Whereas if you build an Orzhov equipment deck or a Selesnya equipment deck or something, Gruul equipment, then it's probably easier to find this thing from, you know, 15 years ago that got printed that will make sense in that deck, then doesn't see very much play and is weird and kind of fun and cool, than it will be, you know, playing the typical combo for that archetype.
Dana, don't give Matt more ideas about how to beat me. You said Selesnya equipment, and I don't give him ideas.
Brother, I don't need any more ideas for Selesnya. They're all there already.
Fantastic. All right, listeners, we'd love to hear from you about your favorite cards that have this charm to them. That what are the cards that you look at and you're like, that is what Commander is all about. Those things that you can't necessarily do just anywhere else. But with that, we're going to call this episode to a close. So, fellas, if listeners want to get in touch with us to tell us about those magnificent cards that they're playing, where can they find you online? Matt?
So you can find me on pretty much any social media platform at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55. And don't forget, we have joined Team Ultimate Guard. If you want some of the best magic accessories on the market, check out Ultimate Guard for all of your needs.
And Dana.
You can find me on the interwebs at Dana Roach. I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and Commander's Herald. And you can find all of us together at patreon.com/EDHRecCast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me online at Joseph M. Schultz, most likely being a fool on Instagram. And if you've got a question for us, you can find the cast at EDH RecCast everywhere online, and you can contact us at edhreccast@gmail.com. Our thanks go out once again to Chase for their fantastic work in the post-production of the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves. Listeners, we'll be back at you next week with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDH Rec your deck before you wreck your deck.